This is Audible.
Oasis Audio presents The Five Love Languages for Men, Tools for Making a Good Relationship Great, by Gary Chapman with Randy Southern. Read for you by Chris Fabry. Dedicated to the hundreds of men who have shared with me their struggles in trying to build a successful marriage. Preface. What's new in Five Love Languages for Men? On a light note, we've added some fun new stories that will give you insight into your own marriage. But this revised and updated version of Five Love Languages Men's Edition also tackles two new issues that must be addressed if the languages of love are to flow freely: dealing with anger and crafting apologies. Learning to speak a new love language isn't easy. Trial and error is often the best strategy available to us, which can be frustrating. Add to that the vulnerability that comes from stepping outside our comfort zone, and you have the makings of a combustible situation. If our efforts to speak a love language fall short or fail to impress our spouse, we may be tempted to get angry. And there's nothing wrong with that. Anger isn't a sin. It's a natural response. What we do with that anger, though, makes all the difference in the world. If we learn to work through our anger in a healthy way, we'll find that the impact on our relationship is seismic. In that same vein, mastering the art of the apology will go a long way toward ensuring the health of your marriage and other relationships for years to come. Done well, an apology can bring closure to tension, conflicts, and hurt feelings that have been sore spots for months, even years. It can change the way your spouse thinks of you, the way she looks at you. It can break down barriers faster than any other words or actions can. With these two new tools to add to your love language workbench, you'll be better equipped than ever to make a difference in your spouse's life. Randy Southern. Chapter 1. How many languages do you speak? Did you hear about the guy who surprised his self-confessed nerd wife on their 10th anniversary with a geek-themed wedding reception? He spent 18 months planning the party, which featured his wife's favorite pop culture obsessions. The groomsmen wore superhero logos under their tuxes. Each tier of the wedding cake was dedicated to one of the couple's favorite movies or TV shows, Superman, Star Wars, Firefly, and Doctor Who, and decorated accordingly. The ring bearer, the couple's 4-year-old son, wore a Superman cape. Somehow the guy managed to keep the whole thing a secret from his wife, even though all their friends and family were involved. Then there was the guy who, for his 1-year anniversary with his girlfriend, printed the story of how they fell in love on a bunch of flyers and posted them all over New York City. He asked people to take pictures of the flyers and post them on Instagram or Twitter, along with a certain hashtag. The whole thing went viral in a matter of hours. The couple received over 1,000 photos, including some tweeted by celebrities, such as Matt Lauer. Or maybe you heard about the guy who created a book for his wife for their 6th anniversary. He spent an entire year writing 365 things he loved about his wife and then compiling the pages into one volume along with photos of the two of them taken over the years. Stories like these usually draw one of two reactions from fellow husbands. Either we tip our hats to these guys and give them kudos for their creativity, not to mention their 15 minutes of fame, or we curse their names for blowing the curve and making the rest of us look lame by comparison. Here's the kicker. Unless those guys made their plans with their wives' primary love languages in mind, they could have achieved the same results with, say, generic greeting cards and Chinese takeout. It's not what you say. It's the language you use. That's not a plug for Cantonese cuisine, though a good dim sum is never a bad thing, or a knock against guys who try hard to impress their wives. Instead, it's an exclamation point on the importance of understanding love languages. Everyone has a primary love language, a way of expressing devotion and affection that touches us deep inside, occasionally puts a goofy grin on our face, and leaves no doubt that we are truly and spectacularly loved. As you probably deduced from the title of this book, there are five basic love languages. One, words of affirmation, chapter 2. 2, quality time, chapter 3. 3, gift giving, chapter 4. 4, acts of service, chapter 5. 5, physical touch, chapter 6. One of them is an express way to your wife's heart. That's not to say she won't respond politely to one or more of the other languages, especially if she sees you making a real effort. Ultimately, though, those other four love languages are as foreign to her as Cantonese is to most native English speakers. On the other hand, when you express your love for your wife using her primary love language, it's like hitting the sweet spot on a baseball bat or golf club. It just feels right. And the results are impressive. The no logic zone. Logic suggests that men naturally gravitate toward women who share their primary love language, that quality timers pair up with quality timers, and physical touchers have eyes only for other physical touchers, that with their shared love language, they communicate their affection easily and freely, forever and ever, amen. Since when does logic have anything to do with love? The truth is that people rarely marry partners who share their primary love language. Instead, guys who are built up by words of affirmation fall in love with girls who are built up through acts of service or quality time or gift giving. Women who experience love primarily through gift giving are drawn to men who experience love through quality time or physical touch or acts of service. And a language barrier is created. In the first stages of the relationship, when the couple is drunk with infatuation, they may not notice the language barrier. They may be so eager to please each other that they do things that are out of character. That is, they speak a love language they don't understand. They stay up all night talking about hopes and dreams. They take long walks holding hands and walking with their arms around each other. They exchange small but meaningful presents. Any concerns they may have about their differences get swept away in the tsunami of romance and excitement. The result? Two married people who speak and respond to different primary love languages. Even those rare couples who share a primary love language find that there are countless different dialects within each language. No two people share the same language and the same dialect. No two people express and receive love in exactly the same way. If that seems like a blueprint for failure, consider this. In the clubhouses of some of the most successful franchises in the NHL, MLB, and English Premier League, you can hear at least three, and probably more, different languages being spoken. The players on those teams find ways to communicate. People who are committed to excellence and success will not let a language barrier stand in their way. When the honeymoon's over. However, the obstacles are there. As the newness of the relationship wears off and the passion levels subside from their honeymoon crests, the two language couple settles down into a routine. They go back to what they know best. The acts of service speaking husband gets busy showing his love for his wife in his native tongue. He keeps her car serviced and clean. He tightens the washers on the leaky faucet. He repaints the bedroom and puts up new trim to match the room she saw and loved on HGTV. Though his quality time speaking wife appreciates the many things he does for her, she also pines for the long conversations they used to have when they were dating. The concentrated time and attention that feeds her soul. She longs for her husband to speak to her in her primary love language. As a result, her love tank, her reservoir of feeling genuinely adored, appreciated, and known, starts to empty. How the scenario plays out from there depends on the couple. Some will chalk it up to the natural course of love and romance and settle for whatever is left. Some will blame the busyness and pressures of everyday life. Some will allow their frustrations and unmet needs to fester and spark conflicts and accusations. Some will suffer in silence, with each partner thinking something is wrong with him or her. Some will eventually convince themselves that they made a mistake in getting married in the first place. There's no telling exactly what will happen when a person's love tank is empty. Where there is challenge, there is opportunity. Someone once said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. If right, that means the approach many spouses take toward overcoming their language barrier is downright crazy. They double down on their own love language, trying over and over again to break through to their spouse in the only way they know. In other words, they work harder instead of smarter. They put the onus on their spouse to translate their actions into a language the spouse can understand. It doesn't matter that your heart is in the right place, or that you're trying as hard as you possibly can, or that other women would feel lucky to have a husband like you. You will not be able to fill your wife's love tank without using her primary love language. The way to build a thriving, exciting, unpredictable, awe-inspiring, life-changing relationship with your wife is to master her primary love language, to embrace the challenge of becoming bilingual. The good news is that the process isn't nearly as challenging as learning an actual language. You don't have to worry about conjugating verbs or using the proper tense. The challenge of becoming fluent in another love language might be better compared to perfecting a golf swing. If you've ever taken lessons from a pro, you know the first step is to unlearn all the bad habits you've developed over the years. In many cases, that involves starting from scratch. The process is awkward at first. Things just don't feel right. They feel unnatural. Little by little, though, that starts to change. With enough repetition, you start to see positive results. The same goes for learning a new love language. If you're an acts of service guy, you're probably not going to feel comfortable giving quality time to your wife, not at first at least. Your initial efforts likely will feel unnatural and forced. But with the right attitude and with the tips and strategies outlined in the pages that follow, you will master a second love language. You will fill your wife's love tank and keep it topped off. You will make her feel uniquely and spectacularly loved. You will experience what it's like to be on top of your game, not just as a loving husband to your wife, but also as a role model to your children, to other young people who don't see that kind of behavior modeled in their own families, to other husbands who are looking for answers. To become bilingual in the language of love is to make a difference in other people's lives. Chapter 2. How to Become Fluent in Words of Affirmation. Love Language Number 1. King Solomon, author of the ancient Hebrew wisdom literature, wrote, "The tongue has the power of life and death." We can tell ourselves that Solomon was laying it on a little thick when he coined that phrase, but if you've ever received an exceptionally good review from a boss, you know how the tongue can add a little life to your step. Likewise, if you've ever been royally chewed out by a coach on the sidelines, you know what it is to die a thousand deaths in front of a home crowd. Words can pack a punch. If the movies have taught us anything, it's that the right words, spoken at the right time by the right person, can inspire people to do the unlikely, the improbable, and in some cases, the near impossible. Think Rocky II, when Adrian, from her hospital bed, says, "There's one thing I want you to do for me. Win. Win." Think Rudy, when Fortune's verbal kick in the pants stops Rudy from quitting the team. "You're 5 feet nothing, 100 and nothing, and you got hardly a speck of athletic ability, and you hung in with the best college football team in the land for 2 years. In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself." Think Hoosiers, when Coach Dale's short motivational speech sets the stage for the greatest upset in the history of Indiana basketball. Forget about the crowds, the size of the school, their fancy uniforms, and remember what got you here. If you put your effort and concentration into playing to your potential, to be the best that you can be, I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end of the game. In my book, you're going to be winners. It's this potential for good, the power of language to inspire, encourage, and build up, that makes words of affirmation such a vital tool in your marital workbench. Putting in a good word. Mark Twain once said, "I can live for 2 months on a good compliment." Spoken like a true words of affirmation guy, his admission gets to the heart of this love language. For someone whose primary manner of receiving love is words of affirmation, compliments and encouragement aren't just nice gestures or polite conversational techniques. They're nourishment. That person doesn't just hear this, "Well done, you'll look incredible in that dress. Atta girl." She also hears this, "You have value. I love you. You make a difference." The real power of words lies in their ability to fill people's love tanks. If your wife's primary love language is words of affirmation, that power is at your fingertips, or more specifically, at the tip of your tongue. How you feel about wielding that power will depend on your own primary love language. If you're the strong, silent type, a guy who generally prefers to let his actions do the talking for him, learning to communicate through words of affirmation may prove to be a challenge. Then again, if you were the kind of guy who backs down from a challenge, especially where it concerns the love of your life, you probably wouldn't be listening to this book. You can become fluent in words of affirmation. Here are some tips to get you started. Flattery will get you nowhere. First things first, flattery is not a dialect of the words of affirmation love language. To the untrained ear, the two may sound familiar, but there are several distinct and important differences between them. The quicker you recognize those differences, the fewer rookie mistakes you're likely to make as you strive for words of affirmation fluency. Flattery is the language of manipulation. Flattery has an agenda. Its ultimate aim is to get something from the person being flattered, or to cast the flatterer in a positive light. Flattery is the tool of lounge lizards. "Hey, baby, you look good. You want to dance?" And apple polishers. "You're looking especially fit today, sir. Have you been working out?" The more flattery your wife has been exposed to, the better she will be at recognizing and dismissing it. Flattery lacks the key ingredient of meaningful affirmation, sincerity. If your words are going to make a difference in your wife's life, you have to believe what you say. Unlike shallow flattery, words of affirmation run deep. They spring from an intimate knowledge of the person being affirmed, in this case, your wife. Unlike flattery, words of affirmation don't arouse suspicion or put people on guard. Words of affirmation won't be met with a defensive posture or dismissed with an eye roll. All joking aside, guys who are especially uncomfortable with verbal affirmation may be tempted to fall back on humor to ease the tension. Resist that temptation. What eases your discomfort may also cause some unintended pain for the person you're trying to affirm. The problem is, many people who are especially inspired or moved by words of affirmation are also especially susceptible to being hurt by less than loving words used in sarcasm, insults, and faint praise. Here are some examples. "It wasn't the worst meal I've ever had." "At least you get points for trying." "Not bad for a 35-year-old. Such thoughtless, backhanded compliments can do more damage than you might imagine and cause more pain than your wife might acknowledge. "I was just kidding," is a pretty weak defense for throwing verbal dust in the face of someone who's thirsty for words of affirmation. senses working overtime. Communicating love through words of affirmation involves more than your mouth. It also involves your eyes, your ears, your memory, your imagination, and more. In order to become fluent in this love language, you have to develop an extensive knowledge of and appreciation for the many things your wife does. In order to develop that appreciation, you have to watch her. In stealth mode, pay attention to the things she does, the things she says, the way she interacts with other people, the thankless jobs she tackles, and the way she makes life better for you and others. Keep a list of your observations on your phone or tablet. Make a point of adding to the list, big or small things, every day. Your list might include things like the following. Knows when something's wrong with the kids. Can make an old cut-off sweatshirt and shorts look good. Always greets visitors at church. Saves us money every week with her shopping skills. Makes a better lasagna than any restaurant. Never misses a bill payment. Keeps our credit rating high. Has great taste in music. After you deliver a compliment or words of affirmation based on an item on your list, delete it. This will ensure that you maintain a constant, fresh supply of affirmations to use. Working the grapevine. What's better, having someone high-five you after a pickup game and say, good job, or walking into a gym and having someone point to you and say, I hear that guy's got some serious game? In both scenarios, you're getting complimented. But the second scenario carries with it some fame and notoriety, which only sweetens the pot. Discovering that people are talking about you in a good way makes any day better. With that in mind, look for ways to send words of affirmation through the grapevine to your wife. Talk her up around other people when she's not around. Publicize her accomplishments and skills. Help others recognize how incredible she is. All things in moderation, of course. You'll want to be careful not to become that guy, the one people try to avoid because they're tired of hearing about his practically perfect wife. You won't be able to control which words of affirmation actually make it back to your wife, but you can direct your comments to the people most likely to spill the beans, your kids, other family members, your mutual friends, her co-workers, and anyone else who spends a lot of time with her. Along those same lines, public affirmations can go a long way toward filling your wife's love tank. Look for opportunities to talk her up when the two of you are with friends or acquaintances. During a dinner out with co-workers, you might say something like, I thought the tiramisu was pretty good, but if I could have any dessert in the world, it would be my wife's peach cobbler. A lesson they'll never forget. Want to set a powerful and lasting example for your kids? Tell them how great their mother is. Be specific, genuine, and generous with your praise. Leave no doubt as to how blessed you are to be her husband. Done right, your words may inspire your sons to heap similar affirmation on their wives when they get married, and inspire your daughters to look for husbands who will do the same for them. Where often is heard an encouraging word. Some of the best opportunities in life involve risk, the very real possibility of rejection, embarrassment, or failure. It takes a lot of courage to roll the dice and face the possible consequences. Those who choose to pursue those opportunities usually face no shortage of discouragers, people inclined to rain on their parade and argue that something can't be done or shouldn't be tried. These doom and gloom promoters can be pretty persuasive, especially if there's no one to counter their influence. Cue the encouraging spouse. Your wife likely has untapped potential in one or more areas of life. That potential may be awaiting your encouraging words. Perhaps she needs to enroll in a course to develop that potential. Maybe she needs to meet some people who have succeeded in that area and can give her insight on the next step she needs to take. Your words may give your wife the courage necessary to take that first step. Let's be clear. I'm not talking about pressuring your wife to do something that you want. I'm talking about encouraging her to develop an interest that she already has. A certain well-meaning husband may be tempted to pressure his wife to look for a more lucrative job. He may think he's encouraging her. But unless that's what she wants to do, his words will sound more like condemnation to her. If she has the desire and motivation to seek a better position, her husband's words will bolster her resolve. If not, his words will come across as judgmental and guilt-inducing. They will express not love, but rejection. If, however, she says, "You know, I've been thinking about starting a catering business on the side," then he has the opportunity to give words of encouragement. If you decide to do that, I can tell you one thing, you'll be a success. That's one of the things I love about you. When you set your mind to something, you do it. If that's what you want to do, I'll certainly do everything I can to help you. Such words may give her the courage to start drawing up a list of potential clients. Encouragement requires empathy, seeing the world from your wife's perspective. We must first learn what is important to our wives. Only then can we give encouragement. With verbal encouragement, we're trying to communicate, "I know, I care, I'm with you, how can I help?" We're trying to show that we believe in her and in her abilities. We're giving credit and praise. Most of us have more potential than we'll ever develop. What holds us back is often a lack of courage. A loving spouse can supply that all-important catalyst. The way you say the things you say. Becoming fluent in words of affirmation requires more than just mastering compliments and encouragement. It also involves communicating with a tone and an attitude that are unmistakably loving. What does this type of tone and attitude sound like? Well, for starters, love is kind. That's not some sappy greeting card sentiment. Kindness is essential to healthy relationships. Speaking kindly to your wife means making sure your words and tone align. Seems like a simple thing, but it can be a challenge for a lot of guys. From an early age, we're conditioned to wield words like weapons. Sarcasm comes easily to us. We use taunts to good-naturedly, and sometimes not so good-naturedly, give others the business. If we're standing in a tee box with a friend or a competitor who just sliced his drive two fairways over, it takes real restraint not to say something like, "Nicely played, Tiger." As we mentioned earlier, what seems like good-natured ribbing to some people can have a much different effect on someone whose primary way of receiving love is through genuine, heartfelt communication. To her, such tactics will seem anything but kind. Maintaining the right tone and attitude is especially important when you're feeling annoyed or angry. Snarling, "I would be delighted to wash dishes tonight," in a tone dripping with sarcasm, will not be received as an expression of love, no matter how clean you get the pans. On the other hand, saying something as pointed as, "I felt disappointed and hurt that you didn't offer to help me this evening," in an honest, kind manner, can be an expression of love. With your tone and attitude, you're telling your wife that you want to be known by her. You're taking steps to build intimacy by sharing your feelings. You're asking for an opportunity to discuss a hurt in order to find healing. Those same words, delivered in a loud, harsh voice, will not be received as an expression of love, but as an expression of condemnation and judgment. The hotter a situation gets, the more of an impact kindness will have. When your wife is angry, upset, and lashing out with provocative words, try responding with a soft, calm voice. Take in everything she has to say about her emotions and feelings. Let her tell you of her hurt, anger, and perception of events. Work hard to put yourself in her shoes and see the situation through her eyes. Express softly and kindly your understanding of why she feels that way. If you've wronged her, be willing to confess the wrong and ask for forgiveness. If your motivation is different from what she's reading, explain your real motivation kindly. Your goal must be to achieve understanding and reconciliation, not to prove your own correctness or superiority. Another principle comes into play as we work to become fluent in the kindness dialect of words of affirmation. Put simply, love doesn't keep a score of wrongs. It doesn't bring up past failures. In marriage, we don't always do the right or best thing. We sometimes say hurtful things to our spouses. We can't erase the past. We can only confess it and agree that it was wrong. We can ask for forgiveness and try to act differently in the future. Having apologized and asked for forgiveness, I can ask if there is anything else I might do to mitigate the hurt I may have caused my wife. When I've been wronged by my wife, and she has painfully apologized and requested forgiveness, I have the option of justice or forgiveness. If I choose justice and seek to pay her back or make her pay for her wrongdoing, I'm making myself the judge and treating her as the felon. Intimacy becomes impossible. If, however, I choose to forgive, intimacy can be restored. Forgiveness is the way of love. I am amazed by how many individuals mess up every new day with yesterday. They insist on bringing into today the failures of yesterday. In so doing, they pollute a potentially wonderful day. I can't believe you did it. I don't think I'll ever forget it. You can't possibly know how much you hurt me. I don't know how you can sit there so smugly after you treated me that way. You ought to be crawling on your knees, begging me for forgiveness. I don't know if I can ever forgive you. Those are not the words of love, but of bitterness, resentment, and revenge. The best thing we can do with the failures of the past is to let them be history. Yes, it happened. Certainly it hurt. And it may still hurt. But she's acknowledged her failure and asked for your forgiveness. We can't erase the past, but we can accept it as history. We can choose to live today free from the failures of yesterday. Forgiveness isn't a feeling. It's a commitment. It's a choice to show mercy, not to hold the offense up against the offender. Forgiveness is an expression of love. I love you. I care about you. And I choose to forgive you. Even though my feelings of hurt may linger, I won't allow what's happened to come between us. I hope we can learn from this experience. You're not a failure because you've failed. You're my wife, and together we'll go on from here. Those are words of affirmation expressed in the dialect of kindness. A little humility goes a long way. The final dialect of words of affirmation that we'll be looking at in this chapter is humility. Love makes requests, not demands. When I demand things from my wife, I become a parent and she the child. In marriage, however, we are equal adult partners. We're not perfect, to be sure, but we are adults and we are partners. If we're to develop an intimate relationship, we need to know each other's desires. If we wish to love each other, we need to know what the other person wants. The way we express those desires, however, is all important. If they come across as demands, we have erased the possibility of intimacy and will drive our spouse away. If, however, we make our needs and desires known in the form of a request, we are giving guidance, not ultimatums. The husband who says, "Could you make that good pasta one of these nights?" is giving his wife guidance on how to love him and thus build intimacy. On the other hand, the husband who says, "Can't we ever have a decent meal around here?" is showing adolescent behavior by making a demand. His wife is likely to fire back, "If you don't like what I make, you cook." When you make a request of your wife, you're affirming her worth and abilities. You're indicating that she has or can do something that's meaningful and worthwhile to you. When you make demands, you become not a lover, but a tyrant. Your wife won't feel affirmed. she'll feel belittled. A request introduces the element of choice. Your wife may choose to respond to your request or to deny it, because love is always a choice. That's what makes it meaningful, to know that my wife loves me enough to respond to one of my requests, communicates emotionally that she cares about me, respects me, admires me, and wants to do something to please me. We cannot get emotional love by way of demand. My wife may, in fact, comply with my demands, but it's not an expression of love. It's an act of fear or guilt or some other emotion, but not love. A request creates the possibility for an expression of love. A demand suffocates that possibility. The more you work these essentials of words of affirmation into your daily interaction with your wife, the more fluent you'll become and the more positive changes you'll see in your relationship. Words of Affirmation Phrasebook. With dedication and practice, you can become fluent in words of affirmation. Along the way, you may need some assistance, ideas to use when you're unable to come up with one of your own. Here are some suggestions for just such an occasion. Don't just say, "You look good." Say, "That's a nice color on you," or, "I like your hair that way." Compliment a different physical feature each day this week. Make a habit of mentioning something specific you've observed that has to do with who she is. Examples: "I meant to tell you, I really loved how you talked with that elderly woman after church." Or, "I enjoy taking walks with you. You always point out interesting things." Initiate conversations to encourage her to share her inner dreams and desires. Begin a campaign of verbal affirmation to inspire courage for her to take steps to make those dreams come true. Add your own observations that might help your wife identify her skills and strengths. For example, "I've never heard you express an interest in teaching, but from the way you handle the kids, I think you would make a terrific teacher." If you're artistic, create a poster or print with her name in the center, surrounded by descriptive words, phrases, and special names you have for her. If you're not so artistic, use old magazines and newspapers to cut and paste ransom note-like messages of affirmation for her. Create a playlist for your wife. You can be the DJ, explaining why you included each song. Send her an encouraging email, particularly if you know she might be having a hard day. Put in a link to an amusing website. Think of every recent argument or problem the two of you have had and try to clear the air. Learn how to say "I love you" or other expressions of affirmation in a different language. Thank her for something she does routinely and probably doesn't even expect to be complimented for. Chapter 3. How to Become Fluent in Quality Time. Love Language Number 2. Time may or may not be the most precious asset we possess. If you're scrambling to pay your mortgage or trying to figure out how to afford college, you can probably build a pretty solid case in favor of money. But time is unique among our commodities. Every day, every person who draws breath on this earth receives the same amount of time, 24 hours, 1,440 minutes, or 86,400 seconds, depending on which denomination you prefer. At the end of every day, every person's allotment is depleted. Time cannot be rolled over or stockpiled. When it's gone, it's gone. Time cannot be stolen or transferred into another account. Its market cannot be cornered. The rich cannot get richer where time is concerned. Its system cannot be gamed, hacked, or tampered with. Time cannot be exchanged or refunded. Time is extremely limited, yet insanely in demand. Think of the things that are competing for your time. Your job. Your overtime demands and opportunities, your commute, your workout, your responsibilities as a friend, neighbor, church member, and concerned citizen, your kids' practices, games, recitals, and programs, your hobbies and pastimes, your body's requirements for sleep and relaxation. So many options, so little time to explore them all. No one understands that truth better than a person whose primary love language is quality time. If you're married to a native quality time speaker, you should feel at least a little flattered. Your wife isn't looking for words of affirmation or gifts or acts of service. She just wants you. She will experience love and affection. She will feel genuinely cared for simply by sharing some of your precious time. A half hour here, an hour there, or a weekend on occasion is enough to keep her love tank filled, provided it's the right kind of time. The right kind of time. Quality is the key. To call something quality is to set a high bar. A mechanic who does quality work doesn't cut corners on a brake job. He isn't distracted while he rebuilds a carburetor. He won't throw up his hands and walk away when he can't immediately pinpoint a rattle in the exhaust system. Someone who does quality work goes the extra mile, stays focused on the task at hand, and won't quit when things don't go right. And so it is with spending quality time with your wife. When you give it, make sure it's the best you've got. Here's how. Deep focus. The key to becoming fluent in the quality time love language is establishing the right mindset. The key to establishing the right mindset is focused attention. Some husbands and wives think they're spending time together when, in reality, they're only living in close proximity. They're in the same house at the same time, but they're not together. A husband who is texting while his wife tries to talk to him isn't giving her quality time because she doesn't have his full attention. That's not to say quality time means spending your together moments gazing into each other's eyes. It means doing something together and giving your full attention to each other. The activity in which you're both engaged is incidental. The important thing emotionally is that you're spending focused time in each other's company. The activity is a vehicle that creates the sense of togetherness. A husband and wife playing tennis together, if it's genuine quality time, will focus not on the game, but on the fact that they're spending time together. What happens on the emotional level is what matters. Spending time together in a common pursuit communicates that you care about each other, that you enjoy being with each other, that you like to do things together. Putting the quality in conversation. Like words of affirmation, the language of quality time has many dialects. One of the most common dialects is quality conversation, that is, a genuine dialogue in which you share experiences, thoughts, feelings, and desires in a friendly, uninterrupted context. To engage in quality conversation is to say, I will focus on drawing you out. I will listen sympathetically to what you have to say. I will ask questions, not in a badgering manner, but with a real desire to understand you. Most people who complain that their spouses don't talk don't mean literally that their spouses never say a word. They mean their spouses seldom take part in sympathetic dialogue. If your wife's primary love language is quality time, such dialogue is crucial to her emotional sense of being loved. I met Patrick when he was 43 and had been married for 17 years. I remember him because his first words were so dramatic. He sat in the leather chair in my office. After briefly introducing himself, he leaned forward and said with great emotion, Dr. Chapman, I have been a fool, a real fool. What led you to that conclusion? I asked. I've been married for 17 years, he said, and my wife has left me. Now I realize what a fool I've been. I rephrased my original question. In what way have you been a fool? My wife would come home from work and tell me about the problems in her office, he explained. I would listen to her and then tell her what I thought she should do. I always gave her advice. I told her she had to confront the problem. Problems don't go away. You have to talk with the people involved or your supervisor. You have to deal with the problems. The next day she would come home from work and tell me about the same problems. I would ask her if she did what I'd suggested the day before. She would shake her head and say no. So I'd repeat my advice. I told her that was the way to deal with the situation. She would come home the next day and tell me about the same problems. Again, I would ask her if she had done what I'd suggested. She would shake her head and say no. After 3 or 4 nights of that, I got angry. I told her not to expect any sympathy from me if she wasn't willing to take the advice I was giving her. She didn't have to live under that kind of stress and pressure. She could solve the problem if she would simply do what I told her. It hurt me to see her living under such stress because I knew she didn't have to. The next time she brought up the problem, I said, "I don't want to hear about it. I've told you what you need to do. If you're not going to listen to my advice, I don't want to hear it." I withdrew and went about my business. Now I realize that she didn't want advice when she told me about her struggles at work. She wanted sympathy. She wanted me to listen, to give her attention, to let her know that I could understand the hurt, the stress, the pressure. She wanted to know that I loved her and that I was with her. She didn't want advice. She just wanted to know that I understood. But I never tried to understand. I was too busy giving advice. And now she's gone. "Why can't you see these things when you're going through them?" he asked. "I was blind to what was going on. Only now do I understand how I failed her." Patrick's wife had been pleading for quality conversation. Emotionally, she longed for him to focus attention on her by listening to her pain and frustration. Patrick wasn't focusing on listening, but on speaking. He listened only long enough to hear the problem and formulate a solution. He didn't listen long enough or well enough to hear her cry for support and understanding. Anyone care to cast the first stone here? The truth is, many of us are like Patrick. We are trained to analyze problems and create solutions. We lose sight of the fact that marriage is a relationship, not a project to be completed or a problem to be solved. A relationship calls for sympathetic listening with a view to understanding the other person's thoughts, feelings, and desires. We may give advice, but only when it's requested, and never in a condescending manner. Most of us have little training in listening. We're far more proficient in thinking and speaking. That lack of training will be hard to hide if your wife's primary love language is quality time and her dialect is quality conversation. Fortunately, listening is a skill that can be acquired fairly quickly, though it takes years to master. Here are some practical tips to get you started. 1. Maintain eye contact when your wife is talking. That keeps your mind from wandering and communicates that she has your full attention. 2. Don't listen to your wife and do something else at the same time. Remember, quality time is giving someone your undivided attention. If you're doing something you can't turn from immediately, tell your wife the truth. A positive approach might be, "I know you're trying to talk to me and I'm interested, but I want to give you my full attention. I can't do that right now, but if you'll give me 10 minutes to finish this, I'll sit down and listen to you." Most wives will respect such a request. 3. Listen for feelings. Ask yourself, what emotion is my wife experiencing? When you think you have the answer, confirm it. For example, "It sounds to me like you're feeling disappointed because I forgot," and then fill in the blank. That gives her the chance to clarify her feelings. It also communicates that you're listening intently to what she's saying. 4. Observe body language. Clenched fists, trembling hands, tears, furrowed brows, and eye movement may give you clues as to what she's feeling. Sometimes body language speaks one message while words speak another. Ask for a clarification to make sure you know what she's really thinking and feeling. 5. Refuse to interrupt. If you give your undivided attention while your wife is talking, you will refrain from defending yourself, hurling accusations, or dogmatically stating your position. Your goal will be to discover your wife's thoughts and feelings. Open up. Quality conversation requires not only sympathetic listening, but also self-revelation. When a wife says, "I wish my husband would talk. I never know what he's thinking or feeling," she's pleading for intimacy. She wants to feel close to her husband, but how can she feel close to someone who's a silent mystery? In order for her to feel loved, he must learn to reveal himself. If her primary love language is quality time and her dialect is quality conversation, her emotional love tank will never be filled until he tells her his thoughts and feelings. Think of it in terms of a tennis game. If one person is doing everything, the result is simply ace after ace. What could be more boring or less engaging for either player? If, on the other hand, player two starts returning the serve, it's game on, back and forth, each of you receiving what the other is offering and then sending it back with your own spin on it. Before you know it, you find yourself in the middle of some long, satisfying volleys. If only quality conversation were as easy as returning a tennis serve. Self-revelation is a challenge for many guys. Some adults grew up in homes where the expression of thoughts and feelings were discouraged. To request a toy was to receive a lecture on the sad state of family finances. The child went away feeling guilty for having the desire, and he quickly learned not to express his desires. When he expressed anger, the parents responded with harsh and condemning words. Thus, the child learned that expressing angry feelings isn't appropriate. If the child was made to feel guilty for expressing disappointment at, say, not being able to go to the store with his father, he learned to hold his disappointment inside. By the time we reach adulthood, many of us have learned to deny our feelings. We're no longer in touch with our emotional selves. A wife says to her husband, "How did you feel about what Steve did?" The husband responds, "I think he was wrong. He should have..." But he's not telling her his feelings. He's voicing his thoughts. Perhaps he has reason to feel angry, hurt, or disappointed. But he's lived so long in the world of thought that he doesn't acknowledge his feelings. If that describes you, then learning the language of quality conversation will be like learning a foreign language. The way to begin is to get in touch with your feelings, to become aware that you're an emotional creature despite having denied that part of your life. A great first step is to keep track of the emotions you feel away from home. Carry a small notepad with you. 3 times each day, ask yourself, "What emotions have I felt in the last 3 hours?" Ask yourself specific questions. What did I feel on the way to work when the driver behind me was riding my bumper? What did I feel when I stopped at the gas station and the automatic pump didn't shut off and covered the side of my car with gas? What did I feel when I got to the office and found out the project I was working on had to be completed in 3 days when I thought I had another 2 weeks? Write down your feelings in the notepad and a word or two to help you remember the event corresponding to the feeling. Your list may look like this. Event, tailgater. Feelings, angry. Event, gas station. Feelings, very upset. Event, work project due in 3 days. Feelings, frustrated and anxious. Do that exercise 3 times a day, and you'll start to develop an awareness of your emotional nature. Using your notepad, communicate your emotions and the events that inspired them briefly to your wife, as many days as possible. In a few weeks, you'll become comfortable expressing your emotions with her. Eventually, you'll feel comfortable discussing your emotions toward your wife, the children, and events that occur in your home. Remember, emotions themselves are neither good nor bad. They're simply our psychological responses to the events of life. Quality activities. Another dialect of quality time is quality activities. At a recent marriage seminar, I asked couples to complete the following sentence. I feel most loved by my husband or wife when blank. Here's the response of a 29-year-old husband who had been married for 8 years. I feel most loved by my wife when we do things together, things I like to do and things she likes to do. We talk more. It sort of feels like we are dating again. That's a typical response of individuals whose primary love language is quality time. The emphasis is on being together, doing things together, giving each other undivided attention. Quality activities may include anything in which one or both of you have an interest. The emphasis is not on what you're doing, but on why you're doing it. The purpose is to experience something together, to have your wife walk away from it thinking, he cares about me. He was willing to do something with me that I enjoy, and he did it with a positive attitude. That is love. And for some people, it is love's loudest voice. Quality activities may include such things as putting in a garden, visiting Civil War battlefields, going to a concert, training for a 5K, or having another couple over for pizza and games. The possibilities are limited only by your interest and willingness to try new experiences. These are the essential aspects of quality activity. At least one of you wants to do it. The other is willing to do it. Both of you know why you're doing it, that is, to express love by being together. One of the byproducts of quality activities is that they provide a memory bank from which to draw in the years ahead. You'll get to be one of those couples who remembers an early morning stroll along the coast, the spring they planted the flower garden, the time they got poison ivy chasing the rabbit through the woods, the night they attended their first major league ball game together, the ski trip that got cut short by a broken leg suffered in the lodge, the amusement parks, the concerts, the cathedrals, and the awe of standing beneath the waterfall after a 2-mile hike. Those are memories of love, especially for the person whose primary love language is quality time. Where do you find time for such activities, especially if you both have careers outside the home? You make time. Just as you make time for lunch and dinner. Why? Because it's just as essential to your marriage as meals are to your health. Is it difficult? Does it take careful planning? Yes. Does it mean you have to give up some individual activities? Perhaps. Does it mean you do some things you don't particularly enjoy? Certainly. Is it worth it? Without a doubt. What's in it for you? The pleasure of living with a wife who feels loved and knowing that you learn to speak her love language fluently. Quality Time Phrasebook. Congratulations on learning to speak the love language of quality time. Certainly, no one can be expected to master a new way of communicating overnight. For those times when you can't come up with the right idea, here are a few to consider. Respect the early bird or night owl tendencies of your wife. Plan your quality times according to her schedule. Set your alarm earlier or drink coffee to stay up later. Whatever it takes for her to feel your time together is special. Sacrifice something you love to create time to share with her. Give up a Saturday morning golf game. Drop out of the church basketball league for a season. Skip a non-essential business commitment. Doing this will send a powerful message that she matters more than these things. Make lists of our top 10 moments together as a couple. When you finish, compare your lists to see how many of your favorite memories overlap. Many men need to unlearn inattentiveness. If you find it hard to devote full attention to any single thing, practice by listening to your kids when they're extra chatty, paying close attention to the Sunday sermon from beginning to end, or listening to music without allowing your mind to wander. Some couples are together a lot more than others. If that's the case for you, don't try to make all your time together quality time. Designate specific times and places for planned togetherness. If your wife is the one who's usually pressed for time, perhaps you can occasionally do one or more of her dreaded time-consuming chores. Pay the bills, run the errands, put the kids to bed, and free her up for some quality time. Find an